everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about eliminating screen problems in their home. This is Melanie Hempy, and I want to welcome everyone again to this wonderful show we have for you today. I'm so glad you're joining us. If you're one of our regular listeners, welcome back. And if you are a new friend, we are glad you found us. You are no longer alone with your screen questions. You have finally found your people. I like to say you found your village, and we're here to help you. So today I'm going to jump right in and tell you about our guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs. He is actually one of my very favorite authors. His book is sitting, I have all his books, but The Collapse of Parenting is sitting always on my desk, and it has more pages dog-eared than it has pages that are not dog-eared. I think it won the prize. And I found this book a number of years ago. And you know, when you stumble, or at least when I stumble across a life-changing book like this one, I just love to reach out to the author. And so I did. So after I read The Collapse of Parenting, I did just that and was able to meet up with Dr. Sachs because we were traveling up where he lives. And it was fabulous. We ended up having a meal together. It was so fun. And ever since then, I've just considered Dr. Sachs to be a really good friend of mine. So welcome to the show, Leonard.
Thanks for inviting me.
You know, let me just start off by saying that there are moments of clarity, maybe I could say, in our parenting journey that really stand out. I don't think anybody's a parenting expert. I don't think there's really such a thing. I used to think maybe there was, but there are moments of clarity that we get. And one of those moments, Dr. Sachs, was when I read The Collapse of Parenting, and even just the tagline on this book says, "How we hurt our kids when we treat them like grownups." That was such a huge moment for me because I felt like, with culture and with all my peers at the time, we were all trying to treat our kids like adults and it was not working. And so much of the screen dilemma that we face today takes root in that fact that we're just not allowing kids to be kids and we're trying to push them ahead quicker than they need to. And once you understand that truth, everything changes. So, you know, at Screen Strong, we help parents understand these truths by explaining this in the using the role of a coach, and that, you know, you're a parent, but you're really a coach, and our kids are the players. And one day they're going to be coaches, but right now they need good coaching. And then, Dr. Sachs, the other thing that I love in this book is the idea that virtue begets virtue, and that it's not a guarantee, but it's really true that our kids need to understand our values and high standards. And, you know, we need to not believe the myth that they're going to binge and go crazy if they don't get everything culture serves to them when they're teenagers. So thank you so much for helping so many families. And there's just so many things in here that have helped, maybe even at the time when you were writing it, you know, our screen condition in our world wasn't anywhere where it is today, but everything totally applies. And of course, I always say the truth never changes. And so thank you so much. And talk a minute just about your background, first of all, and then talk about, you got a new edition coming up with The Collapse of Parenting.
Yeah. So I'm a family doctor, MD. I also have a PhD in psychology. And yeah, the publisher has asked for a revised, updated edition of The Collapse of Parenting. So if any of your listeners have stories they'd like to share.
Yeah, we can put that in the show notes. Yeah,
sure. About a change they made that improved outcomes for their kids. I'd love to hear about it. Maybe we can put it in the new edition.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, if you haven't gotten this book, and then of course the other books that he has, I love Boys Adrift, that if you have boys is an absolute must read. Why Gender Matters and Girls on the Edge. Those are the other books that you just, I think, really should just have on your bookshelf. And I'm really big on when I find a good author that I just love, I just want to read all their stuff. So, you know, we're all kind of in different stages of this journey, but so much of the screen dilemma that we're in does center around just child rearing principles. And if you've got something off in that department, then probably your screen journey is going to not go as well as you would hope. So one thing we love about Screen Strong and this platform that we have, Dr. Sachs, we have a lot of listeners. This podcast is really, really growing, and we just love being able to give an audience to people like you who can already, you've been in this space for so long, and you can just come on here for an hour and share so much. And let me just tell you, it just goes out so far and wide. So thank you so much for joining us today. And just with this one little hour, we're just going to really talk to a bunch of people. And so I would like to do a couple things first, you know, on our agenda for the day. There's a couple new studies that you and I were talking about, and I just want you to jump into the one study that is talking about using really smartphones as a babysitter for young kids. So talk about that study.
Okay. So this is something I see every day that I'm in the office. A parent brings a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, and mom has put on SpongeBob SquarePants on her phone and has given the phone to the child, and the child is looking at the video. The parent's rationale is that this helps them to calm down. Well, researchers at the University of Michigan wanted to see, okay, what does that have any consequence? So they recruited over 400 kids, 3, 4, and 5 years of age. Some of the parents are using the phone to calm kids down. Other parents don't use a phone to calm kids down. So they followed kids over time, and they found that kids whose parents were using the smartphone to calm their kids down, when you look subsequently, you find that those kids are more irritable, more reactive, harder to calm down than kids whose parents were not using a phone. And they conclude, I'm going to quote from the study. They say the findings of the study suggest that frequent use of mobile devices for calming young children may displace their opportunities for learning emotion regulation strategies over time. So we should, quote, encourage alternate calming approaches. When you give your kid a screen, a phone, an iPad, whatever, in a mildly stressful situation, like going to the doctor's office, what's the message you're sending? You're sending, hey, when you're stressed, look at a screen. That's not a good message to send. There's a much better message you can send, which is, hey, we're here together. Let's you and me get through this. We can talk, we can laugh, we can tickle, we can giggle, we can get through this human to human. You don't need a screen. So this study supplies really strong support for saying to parents, put the screen aside, particularly in that stressful situation of going to doctor's office, child doesn't feel well. Don't teach the child to rely on a screen to soothe and relax. Rely on a human being. Use your interpersonal connection, the love between the parent and the child, the touch, and don't put the screen in your child's lap.
This is so important, because if we can get this figured out as a mom and dad out there, if parents can get this figured out early at this age, then you just keep building on those alternative screen activities. But when mom or dad starts using a screen as what we call, you know, the pacifier, the screen pacifier at these early ages, it's super hard to stop doing it.
Yeah. Well, as you quoted me earlier, virtue begets virtue and vice begets vice, but it's not too late. I mean, I got an email the other day from the mother of a 7-year-old who said, oh my goodness, is it too late? No, it's not too late. 7, 12, 14, it's not too late to make a change. Now 32, it's too late. That's the worst email I get from the parent who says, my son is not working, is not looking for work, spends all his time playing video games. He's 32 years old.
Oh my gosh.
That's too late, but your kid is not that old. It's not too late. You can make a change.
So on this study, I think it's so fascinating how we're even getting studies like this, right? Because when you and I started doing a lot of work in this whole area, spreading the, you know, raising awareness about this issue, even 8 and 10 years ago, there really wasn't that many studies. Now it seems like there's every month there's new things coming out. And I think it's so fascinating that this University of Michigan, you know, wanted to even do this. And the reason why they wanted to do it is because somebody had a theory that something isn't right. But like you said, the results were that the more often parents gave the child a smartphone to calm them down, the more likely the child was. And it said, I think, even 3 or 6 months later to be irritable and emotionally hyperreactive. So what you do now, mom and dad, what you're doing now is not neutral. It's not just nothing. And I do think that parents think a lot of times, well, what's the harm? And Dr. Sachs, can you explain why? Can you kind of help us understand a little bit more about what's happening in that young toddler or 4 or 5 year old brain? Why is it that SpongeBob, I love that we're talking about SpongeBob, because I kind of know that that's a crazy phonetic show, right? The screen changes are every 3 seconds, I think. So why does that affect their brain? And why would that trigger this irritability?
Well, again, kids are not born knowing how to soothe themselves. We have to teach them. And when you put a screen in your kid's hand, as I said a moment ago, you're sending the message, this is how it's done. You rely on the screen to calm down. Yeah, I see SpongeBob SquarePants a lot when parents bring this in, but I really don't think a different screen would be any better.
Right.
I don't think Sesame Street is going to be a significant improvement, because the underlying premise, which is that looking at a screen will help to soothe you, is wrong, is flawed. It's not what the way we're wired as human beings. We are creatures. As I often say, a child has more in common with a dog than they have in common with a computer. We are living, breathing organisms. We need to interact with other organisms. We're social creatures. And a screen can't do it. Mm-hmm. It's fake. It's not real. You know, I may have told you this story before, but some years ago, a young mother, this baby must have been like 8 months old at the time. She said, I don't know how people did it before smartphones. And I said, did what? And she said, change a diaper. I said, what do you mean? Are you using the smartphone to learn how to change a diaper? She said, no. When I'm changing my baby's diaper, I give my baby the smartphone, and it just relaxes him so much. And he calms down. I said, look, you know, changing a diaper, it is mildly stressful, but this is a great opportunity for you to connect with your baby, to make that eye contact, which you absolutely can do very well at 8 months of age, and say, goo, goo, gaga, and play voice games and communicate, hey, this is not such a big deal. You and me, we can get through this, no problem whatsoever. Instead, you're putting a screen, you're breaking that parent-child relationship and putting a screen in place of the parent, sending all the wrong messages, teaching your kid to depend on a screen. And that screen will not give life. That screen is a distraction, and it cannot hug, it cannot touch. It's a dead end. It's fake. It's like trying to, if you're hungry, trying to satisfy your hunger by looking at a menu. It won't satisfy. Screens cannot satisfy. They're not people. Put the screen aside.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the bigger thing that I even see is that once parents are conditioned to do that, it becomes a habit. You give your baby the screen when you're changing the diaper. You're in the doctor's office giving them the screen. And over just a very short period of time, it's a knee-jerk habit kind of for the parent, because honestly, you know, they have their phone out, right? I have my phone out too. And I, you know, it's easy. And the kid is probably, the little child is probably grabbing for it because it looks very interesting. And so it's really hard for parents to say no. And so what you have to do is decide ahead of time, we just are not going to use screens in these stressful type of situations when we're standing in line at the UPS store. You know, that's another hard one. You know, what do? You're embarrassed. Your kid is screaming. They don't want to stand there. But these are what you're saying are the things in the study talked about too, that these are the things that are so important for our kids to learn how to do, because if they don't learn this when they're 4 or 5, then Dr. Sachs, then what happens? Then they come in your office, you've got a 6-year-old who can't self-soothe.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, just the other day, it was a younger child, either 3 or 4, where we just needed to look at a rash on the kid's tummy, and the kid didn't want to. And so mom's got the smartphone blaring, while the mom is saying, good job, great job, way to go. And but the kid is not behaving. And it's like mom is saying over and over again, good job, as though somehow that will magically cause the kid to behave better. It's not. And I think it's confusing to the child, because in fact, the child is being a stubborn brat, and praising that behavior is just confusing. Where the kid is now trying to slap mom, and mom's saying, good job, way to go. And how is the child going to learn the meaning of words if you use words in this way?
Mm-hmm.
So, virtue begets virtue, and vice begets vice, and you have to turn off the device and use words in a meaningful way.
Yeah. And you have to do a little bit of hard work first, you know, and then it gets easier. And we see that all the time with parents in our group that are going through a digital detox. They're trying to take this stuff away from their kids, and it's really hard at first. And when you've got young children, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever years old, it is easier than, like you said, than when they're 17, obviously. So you want to do this now. So if you're listening, you just really want to pay attention to this and be very mindful of the times where you're handing over your device to soothe your kids. You may not even realize that you're doing it. And this is why we really recommend no phones in the car. You know, car time is not the time to give your kids phones. When you're in all the errands that you're doing, like you said, in the doctor's offices waiting, they need to learn how to self-soothe, how to manage their own stress, and how to be bored. So there are other things. What do you, off the top of your head, what do you recommend to a parent who says to you, okay, I agree, I'm not going to do this. So what do I do now?
Well, I really like one of the things Michaeline Dukleff says in her book, Hunt, Gather, Parent, about teaching kids awe. Get outdoors, even if it's just a walk down the sidewalk, and observe. And you see grass trying to poke through the sidewalk. So kneel down and look at that with your kid. Isn't that fascinating, the way nature tries to poke up this grass through this sidewalk? There's all kinds of wonderful things in the world around us. Teach kids to observe, mm-hmm. and to be in awe of this world, and instead of looking for amusement in a screen.
Yeah. And you can even do this when you're standing in line at the post office.
Yes, you can.
You can point things out. You can play I Spy games. You can have other alternative things in your purse or pocket to show them it doesn't have to be a screen. We got a Facebook question I want to ask you, and this was just this week, I think, or very recent. And this parent was in the group sharing about how she realized her young kids are having, you know, meltdowns a lot because she's trying to take the screens away. She's feeling very strong that she needs to be screen strong in her family. And of course, that means that we don't take all the screens away. That is not what screen strong is, but we do believe we need to take the toxic screens that are actually causing your kids meltdowns. Those would be the toxic screens. And so one question was, I have a 5-year-old boy. When I take the tablet away from him, he kicks and calls me names and bites. What do we do? I mean, these parents out there, you know, Dr. Sachs, I feel so bad for them. I mean, my empathy is so great because I know how hard this can be, but he's 5 years old. He's not 2. So what do you do? What do you recommend a parent in that situation?
Well, in that situation, I would say that sounds to me like a kid who is addicted. Addiction, you can be addicted at any age. And yes, children can be addicted. Mm-hmm. What we've learned over decades of research with addicts is that if a kid's truly an addict, and it sounds like that kid may be, the intervention has to be abstinence. And I would assert that that child should not be on screens. I would remove the iPad from the home and teach that kid to re-engage with the real world, teach that kid that children should respect their parents and not hit or kick or scream or abuse their parents. I think that requires a period of abstinence.
Oh, I agree. Do you believe kind of just the cold turkey approach where you make your decision, you talk to your spouse?
I do think so, because trying to taper doesn't work. It just causes kids to treasure and value the screen all the more and to resist the withdrawal of the screen all the more. And you're not teaching the kid to find other fun things to do. I mean, the world is such a rich place for a 5-year-old. Everything is new. Yeah. And if that kid is hitting and biting and kicking, that's a kid who really needs to reengage with the real world.
Oh my goodness, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that again in a minute, but I want to move on to this next, the next study that we were talking about. And this one involves the study around the frequency of teenagers checking their social media. This is so fascinating to me, and this is going to lead us into another detox discussion. So hang on, everybody. We're still going to talk about a detox, but unpack this study a minute for us, Dr. Sachs.
Okay, so this is a study from the University of North Carolina where researchers now recruited kids, middle school kids, and asked them how often, these are 6th and 7th graders, how often do you look at social media, like Instagram? Then they did these high-resolution brain scans following up these kids over 3 years. To understand the significance of what they found, you need to, first of all, refresh your memory, and this will be familiar, I think, to many, although maybe not all your parents, that in terms of neuroscience, brain development is a process of maturation where activity moves out of the quote-unquote primitive nuclei, like the amygdala at the base of the brain, and up into the executive functioning areas of the brain, like dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. So normally when you do brain scans over time and you look at how the brain responds to stimulation, you see over time as kids move through adolescence that you get less and less activity in the amygdala, which is the area of the brain that's involved in aggression and anxiety and fear, and more activity up in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, which is executive functioning and self-control. What they found was that if kids are not looking at social media very often, then you see what you should see and expect to see, that over time, over 3 years, you see less activity in the amygdala and more activity in the prefrontal cortex. But the really startling and surprising finding is that when kids are checking their social media a lot, 15, 18, 20, more than 20 times a day, you see the opposite pattern in brain development, that over time, over those 3 years, you're seeing more and more activity in the amygdala and less activity in prefrontal cortex. So this is the first study we have suggesting that checking social media frequently actually stops or reverses brain maturation. This is a very startling study. I'm sure we're going to be looking at other people trying to replicate this just published last month, January 2023. But it raises questions about, social media may actually be adversely affecting brain development in teenagers.
Wow. This is very important to talk about, because up until now, through the discussions that we have really in culture at large, and what I mean by that is just me being in the, you know, boots on the ground, talking to groups of parents, you talk to groups of parents a lot, and just being out there on the front line, this is not something that was really on our radar as much as all the other reasons why social media is not good for kids. And I think a lot of times parents immediately see the problem when their child stumbles across a predator situation or a sexting situation or any of the other, you know, pick a situation. There's so many out there that our kids can get in trouble on social media. And I think it's so fascinating that now science is coming around and research is coming around and say, hey, I wonder if there's more. I wonder if it's not just content. I wonder if it is frequency. I wonder if it is time. Even if they're on, you know, checking social media and it's all fine and they're just talking about their kitty cats at home or something, just the fact that they are checking, the frequency that they're checking, and you were saying like 20 times a day. Honestly, in my sphere over here in the high school, these kids are checking 20 times an hour, you know? So frequency has got, I mean, this makes sense. This study, I guess, you know, it just makes so much sense to me that something's got to give. You can't do a screen activity like that, you know, that many times. I mean, it just makes me nervous thinking about it, having to check social media even 20 times a day.
Yeah. Jonathan Haidt at New York University has written a lot about this, and he made an interesting analogy recently. He said, imagine if we shot young kids into outer space in zero gravity, then expected them to develop normally. Well, they wouldn't, because kids need gravity in order to develop strong bones and strong muscles and coordination. And if they're in zero gravity, bad things are going to happen because they're not mature and their bones will not develop normally. He said, now we're letting kids go into their bedrooms, close the door, during those years where they're supposed to be developing social skills and self-control and maturation, and instead they're looking at screens and interacting with people via screens and social media. He said, it's crazy. It's just like shooting kids into outer space and expecting their bones to develop normally. That's not the way we're wired. We're wired over millennia of evolution to grow up with face-to-face contact with other people. And screens are not that. When kids are engaging with each other via social media on a screen, it's just as remote from real life as trying to develop a strong skeleton in zero gravity. Mm-hmm. It's not the real thing. We're going to see bad outcomes, and that's what we're seeing, this explosion of anxiety, depression, and loneliness, because kids seem to believe that interacting with other kids on social media is something like interacting in the real world. It's not. And we have all this research now showing that if you're interacting with other people on social media, and that's what you're relying on for social contact, you're going to be desperately lonely.
Yeah.
Because it's not the real thing. As I said before, it's like trying to satisfy your hunger by looking at a menu. It won't satisfy. It's not real.
I love the description of the zero gravity. We're going to put a link to the gentleman you talked about in our notes, so you guys don't have to hit your back button right now, but we're going to put that in there. But the zero gravity is that just, I don't know, just really set up a light bulb moment for me, because what you just said about social media not being real, it's more fake. It's not grounding. It's not like gravity. We need gravity. We don't need a teenager to be in their room, you know, checking their social media 20, 30, 40 times a day. It's not a foundational pull. It's taking them into outer space. I love that. That whole zero gravity description really, really hit for me. Thank you for sharing that. And it's not, see, the thing I love about this discussion right now is we're not even talking about the negative content or the violent content or all the right. other things that can cause problems, right?
Well, and that's what I emphasize to parents, because many parents are really onto this sexual predator thing, and they're very concerned about these stories of kids being groomed online. Well, yeah, I mean, that happens, but that's not common.
Yes.
What is very common is kids spending hours a day looking at social media and gradually becoming more anxious, more depressed, more disengaged, more lonely. And there's no sexual predation going on. It's just these apps used the way that they are intended to use can lead kids down a rabbit hole that leads to isolation and disengagement.
And these are the problems that, like I always like to say, that you never hear a drowning child scream, right? So this is the problem you with your teenager. It's leading down to this isolated, quiet place that you may not hear them complain about a predator, for example, or mom, I saw this horrible thing. You're not going to maybe hear that. You're not going to hear it. And that's the problem. They're going to get deeper and deeper and deeper off in their, you know, outer space, zero gravity world. And this is when it's devastating, when the news, you know, comes out from a family that their child started doing self-harm, or even the worst, suicide or something that happens, you know, as a result. And the mom is like, I just never knew. I never knew. And it's because they are existing in this, maybe it's not horrible at first, but it goes into the isolation. And so this is a great place to be right here in this conversation, because what I want to ask you is, how do you know? Because we just said, you know, maybe they're not into the violent, you know, sexual content. So that's good. But maybe they're just in, you know, checking and just mindlessly wondering. Let's start with a teenage girl, and then we're going to talk about a boy in a video game. I want to ask you, how do you know when you're a teenage girl or boy is ready for a detox? What are the signs, or are there signs? Is it just sort of an intuition, you know? And I know that, Dr. Sachs, we can't really have the perfect checklist, but in general, what do you think the signs would be for a high school teenager that would tip the parents off to realize that, you know, this is getting out of control and we need to do a detox?
Well, a key one for teenagers and social media is displacement. By displacement, I mean the kid is engaging in social media instead of engaging in real activities with their friends in the real world. I have no problems with kids using an app or a phone to arrange social activities.
Sure.
And these apps make it easy to send out a message to a defined group of friends saying, hey, let's meet at Vanessa's house 2:00 Saturday. And that's fine. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But when the kid is using the social media instead of engaging with other kids in the real world, spending a lot of time trying to post the perfect TikTok video, that's when it's a problem. That's when that risk of anxiety and depression and disengagement is going to increase.
Yeah. I love that. It's because that's pretty easy for a parent to monitor. You know, most of the time where your kids are. And so if they have their friends over all the time and they're involved in in-person social activities a lot, and they're doing other hobbies and they're busy on the team or the debate team, the sports team, whatever it is, you know, you can keep an eye on that. I think that when they are replacing their normal likes and interests for more screen time, that is definitely a warning that there's time to cut back. With video games, I know you have written some fabulous articles, and I'm going to put a link in our notes there for our listeners, because there's a couple, how to tell if your son is a video game addict. I love that one. And in that article, you have displacement as well, which I, of course, 100% agree with. This happened to my son, my oldest son, that we struggled so much with. And if I had known these four things, I think you would have saved our life over here, Dr. Sachs. But at the time, I didn't know. So I'm just going to say them really quick. It's the displacement, the same thing that you just described. They're quitting things. And And mom and dad, this doesn't maybe happen overnight. So you have to be aware and you have to kind of say, let's see, he has quit baseball. Now he's quit soccer. Now he quit the newspaper. Let's see, what else are we quitting? And, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. So it can sneak in. The other thing is lying. Of course, that's true with social media as well as video games, that if your child is lying to you, I know with social media as well as video games, there's like this weird time warp where you think you're on for 10 minutes and really it's been 2 hours. And yep. So I agree that, you know, sometimes kids don't know if you say, how long have you been on? And they say 10 minutes. Really? No, honey, it's been 2 hours. Are you lying to me? But we're talking about the kind of lying, right, Dr. Sachs, that is lying that addicts do. You know, it's lying to get more of your drug.
Yep.
And then the third thing that you had in that article was just anger and irritability. So if they're getting angry or anxious, when you put reasonable limits on their game or their phone, that could be a sign of a problem. And we're not saying that, they're all addicted, but you know what? Addiction is sort of a continuum. I mean, it's sort of a pathway where it kind of starts and then like the frog getting boiled in the water. It's like, hey, when does the water get to boiling point? So these are all things I think that just kind of lead to it. And then of course, the fourth thing that you had in this article was escalation. So if they're spending more and more time playing video games in this case, or being on their phone, maybe you noticed they were on their social media, you know, an hour a day. And now you're noticing, you know what, it's more like 3 hours. And then we go to bed. And as our teenagers get older, Dr. Sachs, this is one thing that happened in our house. I'm tired. I'm going to bed before my kids now, I hate to say. And so I don't really know what they're doing, kind of do here in our house.
There's one more I would add that is not in that article, but the one more that I think is very important, and that is loss of control. And here's what I mean by loss of control. So let's say your son has a big exam tomorrow and he wants to do well on that exam, but he figures he'll just play one little round of Fortnite, Battle Royale, no big deal, 20 minutes. At 9 o'clock, he'll just play one round. And so he goes online and he starts playing Fortnite. And at 2 in the morning, you see his lights still on. He's still playing. And you go in to say, hey, you got a big exam tomorrow. You need to turn off the device. And he becomes angry. That's what I mean by loss of control.
Yeah.
He knows he shouldn't be playing and he's playing anyhow. Loss of control is a real feature that distinguishes addiction from just abuse. And this, again, is a distinction that's made throughout addiction research, whether we're talking about heroin or alcohol or video games. Researchers talk about abuse, meaning this person is abusing the substance, but they're not truly an addict. You can be an alcohol abuser without being an alcoholic. And that is an important distinction, because for the alcohol abuser, it is reasonable to talk about moderation and to counsel them on moderation. They can make a change and say, all right, I'm not going to binge drink anymore. I'll have no more than one or two drinks a night. The person who's simply occasionally abusing, that's a reasonable step for them to take. But for the addict, you have to require abstinence.
Yeah.
Because the addict is going to experience loss of control. They're going to take that drink and they can't stop. That's characteristic of the addict. And it is a characteristic that is true of the video game addict. He starts playing and he can't stop. Mm-hmm. So if you observe that loss of control in your son, that suggests an addiction. And that means that you have to remove the video game console from the house.
Yeah, you got to take it out of the house. And I love that this ties right in with the study that you were just talking about. It seems like this makes sense, this loss of control, because this area of their brain, this frontal cortex area, is not being worked out. It's like that U-turn happens and they keep stimulating the limbic area. They keep stimulating that area of their brain that gets stimulated when they're on their social media as well as their game. And it's triggering more aggression and fear and anxiety. And that's what we don't want to be doing right now. And so if it's done too much, it's going to pave those pathways over and over in that area of their brain. And that's kind of that loss of control, right? Because your frontal cortex acts like the brakes and puts the controls on. And that's a mature thing to say, after 45 minutes, I think I'm going to get off my game so I can finish my math assignment. You know, that takes a lot of control. So it makes sense that it is really changing their brain over time.
And a big theme of my book, The Collapse of Parenting, is that parents need to inculcate good habits. And one good habit is no video games until all the chores are done and all the homework is done. Yeah. Work before play. And again, kids are not born knowing that.
No.
They have to be taught, and you, the parent, have to teach them. And have to insist no video games until all the chores are done and all the homework is done.
But then you also have to, of course, look at the warning signs and make sure that these games aren't causing the displacement, the lying, the irritability, the escalation, the loss of control. So you have to constantly be monitoring that. What I have seen and what happened in my house as well is it doesn't take too long for a perfectly balanced kid on their game to, for example, maybe they are playing soccer and they break their ankle. So now they're on the couch. Now they're not in soccer. So now what do? They're starting to game a lot more, or they're on their phone a lot more. So it doesn't take long. And sometimes it's just an event that triggers in your life. Now all of a sudden they went from a relatively balanced, although I could argue that balancing screens in teenagers is just super hard. So I don't know where that sweet spot is, but now they went from there to now they're in this danger zone, you know, the red zone. And now we're all trying to figure out now how to detox our teenagers. So let's just say that we have decided that our son or daughter is on their phone way too much, and we've just got to do a detox. They're on their game too much. Maybe we needed to do a detox. I want to wrap up with just a quick discussion about how this works, and especially, Dr. Sachs, when you don't have support from your spouse. So whether you're in a married relationship or not, the other parent of the child, whether it's in a divorce situation or a living in the same home situation, we know, and we have a lot of questions about this, and I get a lot of questions when I'm out and about. What do I do when my wife or my husband doesn't see eye to eye that we need to do a detox? I think this is one of the most volatile parenting decisions. I don't know if I'm going to say volatile. It can get volatile.
Yes.
When the dad decides, oh my goodness, my daughter is on her phone too much, we need to switch this phone to a taught text phone. And the mom says, well, then she won't have any friends and, you know, she won't be popular. And then the vice versa happens when the mom is saying, this video game has to go. You're not the one home watching this unfold. You know, my son is just, you know, not doing his chores and not doing his homework. And honey, you're at work all day and you don't understand what I'm dealing with. And then the dad says, well, I played when I was a kid and I think it's fine. And you're making a big deal about this. How do we work this out?
Yeah, it can be a major, major problem. It can undermine a relationship. It can be a factor contributing to divorce. I personally think it is absolutely appropriate to seek professional counseling. Mm. Because you need a neutral referee here. Otherwise, it just becomes an argument. And it can be a very frustrating argument. And I would say to that dad, you cannot teach a virtue which you do not possess. If dad is spending hours a day playing video games, he will not be able to teach his son to limit and exercise self-control with regard to his video games. Another sad story to share. I was speaking to middle school kids at a school in Towson, Maryland, north of Baltimore. The way we'd structured the day is morning assemblies with students, afternoon workshop with teachers, evening presentation to parents. So when we do the day that way, I'll say to them, as I said to these kids, hey, this evening I'm going to meet with some of your parents. I'm going to tell them no more than 30 minutes a day on social media, and I'm going to have them install apps on your device that will limit you and will shut you out of social media after that 30 minutes a day. What are your thoughts? What are your questions about that? And we do this that way to make it easier for the parents, so that when the parents say, okay, from now on, no more than 30 minutes a day on social media, the kids will know it's not just parents being mean. They are following the evidence-based guidelines that I've shared.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, so no, I'm going to advise your parents to limit you to no more than 30 minutes a day on social media. What do you think about that? And a boy raised his hand and he said, can you tell me how to install that app on my mom's phone? And he proceeded to tell the entire middle school how he comes home from school and he's trying to talk to his mom about his day. And she's looking at her Instagram and scrolling through her Instagram, not even looking at him, giving distracted one-word answers. It just broke my heart because here is this boy telling the whole school his mom would rather look at Instagram than talk with her son. You cannot teach a virtue which you do not possess. If you don't want your kid to be on social media, then you have to limit how much time you're on social media. If you don't want your son spending hours a day on video games, then you can't be hours a day on video games. If you and your spouse are not in agreement about what the limits should be, that's a big deal. And yeah, you can try sharing that with them. And again, my books, Boys Adrift, Girls on the Edge, The Collapse of Parenting, are all intended to be used as resources so that you can share with them the scholarly research, lots of studies in all those books supporting these limits. But if your spouse is like, hey, I just don't buy it, I'm not going to support you in this, then I personally think you need to find someone to serve as a referee, maybe a professional counselor, maybe a pastor, maybe your family doctor. Mm-hmm. I'm a family doctor and I'm very comfortable doing this. And I will say to them, don't look at each other because we don't want this to be an argument. Look at me. Tell me what your thoughts are. And then, no, Dad, you wait and listen. Mm-hmm. We're going to listen to Mom first. And then speak to me. The good counselor can be a neutral third-party referee because if you're talking at each other, it's a debate. And in a debate, you're not really listening. You're just listening to find points of weakness where you can attack. Mm-hmm. And you're not really having a conversation. With a good referee, you can listen. Mm-hmm. While your partner is talking and maybe have that conversation. A good referee should be able to facilitate a conversation so that compromise can be struck in the best interest of the child. This is true even of divorced parents because I'll say, look, you both love your kid. You may no longer love each other, but you love your kid. So let's try and figure out what is best for your child and how can you both support your child.
And I think it is really important to have a good basis of education because maybe one parent has read all your books and read other things and looked at the studies and really, you know, done their research, but the other parent is still over here steps behind. And then they start making it super emotional and about your opinion versus my opinion when really we need to get education.
Well, and when it's getting super emotional, I have found it's usually because the parent doesn't want to limit their own use of the devices. The reason they're so passionate about this, the reason the dad is pushing back so hard about any suggestion that they limit the son's video games is because dad's going to have to limit his video games. You follow that line of reasoning. Right. If you should be doing your homework before you play video games, then it follows that dad should be doing the chores before he plays video games. Mm-hmm. And he's not dumb. He knows where this leads, and he doesn't want to follow that. So when a parent is really pushing back hard, it is very often because the parent doesn't want any limits on what they're doing. They don't want to have to make a change in their own life. Mm-hmm. And that's why the closing chapter of my book, The Collapse of Parenting, I say, in order to become a better parent, you've got to become a better person. You may have to make a change. Mm-hmm. You may have to limit what you're doing with your device because you cannot teach a virtue you don't possess. If you're wasting time on social media, if you're wasting time playing video games, you're not going to be able to teach your kid any better. You're going to have to make a change in your own life. And that's when parents really push back because you're hitting pretty close to home.
Oh, it's hard. And we have blind spots and we have biases and we don't even realize it all the time. If you're struggling right now with a situation where you know your child needs to go through a detox and your spouse is not on board, get in our group. We will help you in there. It's our free form that we have on our website. In our website, we actually have Dr. Stacy and I in there answering very specific questions when you do that in that private forum on the website. I agree with everything, Dr. Sachs, that you're saying. And I would also say just another maybe small tip would be when you're discussing with a spouse who's not in agreement, that you just say, well, why don't we just try this for 6 months?
I suggest 6 weeks. 6 months, I think, is you're going to have a big fight, but 6 weeks is
you can do anything for 6 weeks
to see the big change, but not so much time that it's easier to get a buy-in for 6 weeks than it is for 6 weeks.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So that makes sense. And we have a 30-day detox that we even encourage parents to just take a month. And in our 30-day detox, the course that we have, we give you lots of suggestions of what to do and how to plan your weeks. And it actually works really well because what we're showing you are tips and suggestions, list of things to do.
And I also warn parents that the first week is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
The first week, the kid is going to be angry and irritable and silent treatment. And if you don't give parents that heads up, 3-4 days in, they're like, well, this is obviously not working.
And that's right.
And I can't go through this because my kid hates me. Warn them in advance. The first week is going to be really tough.
Yes.
If your daughter's had unlimited access to social media, your son's been allowed to stay up past midnight playing video games, and now you make a change, that first week's going to be really hard. Stick with it. In 6 weeks, you'll see a difference.
You'll see a difference. I'm so glad you said that because usually the first few days for really young children, but it's the first week or 10 days for older kids that it's super hard. But we promise you will start seeing the tide turn. And the biggest thing that we hear right away is that I'm talking to my kids more. Like that's the first thing that starts to happen. And
conversation.
And I feel like most of our screen issues that we have in our kids, you know, in our homes can be solved by parents putting their phone away, putting their video game away, and go spending time with your kids. It's not that hard. This is not rocket science. This is easy to do. The fix is easier than you think. And the results, once you get to this balanced lifestyle where you don't have toxic screens that are interrupting your whole family attachment and your family connection, it is so much easier, Dr. Sachs. It's so much easier to parent without having those distractions and where we can just enjoy our kids. You know, when you think about high school, it is 48 months. That's it. That's all we have. That's all the time we have left when we have kids that are in high school. We want to spend time with them. The screens are not going anywhere. They're going to be there the rest of their life. They will have smartphones. They will have all the things and access to everything. But we just want to spend more time with them. So interesting thing, Dr. Sachs, about this whole discussion with the detox, what just hit me was that as you were saying about, you know, just the parents coming on board and those first few weeks being really hard, it all goes back to the Collapse of Parenting book that says how we hurt our kids when we treat them like grownups. We cannot treat our kids like adults. And I, in my house, like to say, there are certain things they don't get to vote on. And this is one thing as a parent that you have to be tough. You have to be strong. You'd be that strong coach. Realize that your teenager is going to kick and, you know, rebel a little bit about this, but it won't last forever. You have to be the coach. You can't think they are able to coach themselves. They're not adults yet. And then it all makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that many parents feel like enlightened parenting means letting kids decide. And in some domains, that may be true, but in this domain, whether or not the kid's going to have the screen in their bedroom, you have to understand the kid is now immersed in a toxic culture. American popular culture now pushes kids to be on their screens. And it's not realistic to expect a 14-year-old or a 16-year-old to say, oh, well, I'm more virtuous. I'm not going to do that. They have to be allowed to say, hey, my evil parents won't let me. You have to have the courage to be the evil parent.
Yes. Love it. I love it. And if y'all want more information on that topic, Dr. Sachs. We will put in the show notes the other podcasts that you did for us that cover that those topics that you covered. So thank you so much. So we have to wrap up. Oh my goodness, I'm looking at the clock and we're all over time here. So let's just end. I would love for you to offer a word of encouragement for the families who are struggling and they're listening and they found our podcast maybe a few weeks ago and they're so excited and here they get to listen to you all of a sudden. This is so great. What are your words of encouragement for a family who's like, okay, we have problems. I know I need to do something. We can't stay in the spot that we're in right now. And we're going to maybe go over to the Screen Strong Detox. We're going to get instructions on how to do this, but we're feeling very overwhelmed. We get these notes in our Facebook all the time. I'm just looking at a couple right now of parents that one has a 10-year-old. They have, you know, friends at school that play video games, friends at their neighbors that all play video games, and they're all at each other's houses all the time. And she doesn't know how to pull her kid off of a video game when all the other kids are playing.
So one word of encouragement, do something really fun with your kid. Make the time, block out the date. We're going to go tubing. We're going to go for a climb in the mountain. We're going to do indoor rock climbing. Find something fun to do together. We're going to go on a boat ride. Something fun to do together to connect outdoors in the real world with your child, any age. I devote a chapter of my book, The Collapse of Parenting. It's titled Enjoy. You've got to prioritize, block out the time in the schedule to do something fun with your kid to help break that addiction.
That's awesome. That is wonderful. And everybody can do this, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money.
Doesn't.
It just picking your kids and spending time with them. And, you know, if you're working, most parents are working, both parents are working, it's hard, but you know what? You've got to get creative around this, and you've got to win your kids back in a sense. You've got to be having more fun with them than that video game. So I love that. I love just enjoying your kids more. Thank you so much for coming on today, Dr. Sachs. We appreciate every minute you spend with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. So what's your homework? To get Dr. Sachs's books, and we will have them listed below. Get his books because they just are not only about screen time, but they give you such a good foundation on how to raise kids and just really, really solid truths and principles that really work. Get our Screen Strong Lifestyle course. The best way to do this course is to get your group of five friends together, go through it together. And in that course, we do make recommendations to do different reading, different books that we recommend, but you've got to get your little tribe together, your village, and you don't need 100 people. You just only need a handful of people. We also have our 30-day detox available for you where we have all the instructions and help and tips, and it's a lot easier to do it when you have some ideas of what to do during that time and also how to talk to your spouse about that. We have that in there as well. And then finally, don't forget to share this podcast. It is really growing and we're reaching so many families. So thank you so much for doing that. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you remove the screen conflicts from your home. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.